440 Podcast, the one music podcast everyone can get in tune with. I'm your host, Charles Fiore. This week, I went down to the North Carolina Museum of History, that's in Raleigh, to see the Ernie Barnes exhibit. And man, it was a great setup. First of all, the museum is free, as are, you know, a couple different museums down there. And so you have access to all these exhibits just walking in off the street, including the Barnes exhibit, which is running through the museum through, you know, March 3rd. It was really impressive. They probably have 20 to 30 of Barnes's paintings. They have a biographical video. They have a lot of signage offering tidbits and stuff about his life, as well as mementos from his high school playing days, because Barnes was actually a North Carolina native, grew up just up the road in Durham. Ernest Barnes was known as Big Rembrandt. He holds the distinction, according to this exhibit anyway, of being the first successful professional athlete slash artist. After his playing days are over, he became a successful painter. For those of you who aren't familiar with Barnes' work, he's probably best known for his painting The Sugar Shack, which appeared on a Marvin Gaye album cover and also in the closing credits of the TV show Good Times. Funny thing about The Sugar Shack is that it was actually painted in the Durham Armory, which is now kind of an event space run by the city, but I've definitely seen a few bands there during Moogfest. It's a great venue. The sound gets absolutely pumping in there, so I can only imagine the same was true while Barnes was growing up. So Barnes, you know, born and raised in Durham, North Carolina, born in 1938, July 15th. He grew up in what was then known as the Hayti District, a historic African-American community full of black-owned businesses, very rich in culture, a community that at its peak boasted over 200 African-American-owned businesses. His father climbed the hill each day, crossed the railroad tracks to work at Liggett Myers Tobacco. His mom cleaned houses, and that's how they made ends meet. Barnes was always big for his age. He was voted top athlete of his senior class, graduated with 26 athletic scholarships. But, you know, due to segregation, which at that time didn't even allow Barnes to go to some museum exhibits, Barnes chose the North Carolina College at Durham, which is now known as North Carolina Central University. So he went there on a full ride to play football. And he was an offensive lineman there. He studied art and also showed a little bit of a knack for marketing. Funny thing, you know, Barnes always said that, quote, you know, football was the last thing in the world he wanted to do, but it opened doors for him down the road. So you kind of get a sense of him as like this kid who maybe was just kind of always bigger than his classmates, and so found out he had a lot of success in sports, and that football was kind of the thing that got him some attention and respect and all that. And so he did it, but maybe inside, you know, maybe he had kind of the soul of the artist in him, and you know, saw football as an opportunity, you know, nothing more, because what he really wanted to do was paint. So drafted out of college by the Washington Redskins in the eighth round in 1959, Barnes was, but the Redskins, renounced the pick minutes later when they find out Barnes is black, all right? So anyway, the Redskins renounce Barnes' pick. He's drafted later by the Baltimore Colts. He kicks around for several years and ends up having a very nice career for himself as a offensive lineman in the Pro Football League there. But, you know, pro sports didn't pay as well back then. So his side hustle was always his art. During practices and between games, he was always sketching, and his teammates ended up giving him that nickname, Big Rembrandt. So after football, you know, Barnes basically becomes one of the most preeminent figurative artists of his era. The name is escaping me, but he's basically sponsored by the owner of his last football team, and they throw a big gallery opening, and Barnes gets a lot of notice in the Times and all that, and, you know, sky's the limit. Bridget Lacey, writing in the Raleigh News and Observer, said that Barnes' signature style was elongated figures, which really capture the movement of athletics on the field, the court, and even sitting on the bench. And in fact, Barnes was the official artist of the 1984 Olympics. You really get to see the progression of the artist from his early focus on things that were familiar to him, characters and locations he knew growing up in North Carolina, as well as, you know, his teammates on the football field. He painted a lot of sports. You know, the cool thing was, you know, early on, he framed all his paintings out with wood taken from the split rail fence behind his house in Durham. And he did this because, according to him, his father knew nothing about art. And he framed out his paintings with the wood from the fence because that way his father would get to, you know, go with him to every exhibit. And wherever Barnes went, wherever Barnes' paintings went, his father was there with him. And he really appreciated that his father had worked so hard for them and supported them all those years. Barnes' focus in college, you know, he showed a knack for marketing. And that's sort of evident in his paintings. They seem very laid out. They seem very planned. But the upside of that, to me, is that every character in his paintings, and that's the best word for it, I don't know how else to describe it, really, every character in his paintings seems to come with a story. You know, there are individual, these crowd scenes, but everyone in that crowd is an individual with a fully realized life behind it. And that's sort of one of the appeals of Barnes' work. The other appeal, of course, is that everybody in his painting seems to be fighting for their life. I mean, it is, they're on the point of collapse. They're exhausted. They are feeling the music more than they've ever felt it before, or they've just played the game of their life, or they've left it all on the field. And the stakes couldn't be higher in Barnes' work. And it's just the pedals to the metal from the get-go. I wouldn't say there's a lot of quiet moments, but he kind of hides his quiet moments. Even in the Sugar Shack, very wild sort of dance party going on the, and in the middle of this whole dance party, there's an image of the security guard hired presumably to keep the peace at this thing. And the guard's just sort of sitting slumped in front of the stage on a chair at his feet as a, you know, half-empty bottle of liquor, kind of a glum expression on his face. And it stands out once you notice him, but you wouldn't, it's not nearly the first thing you notice looking at the painting off the bat. And those kind of hidden gems are really what makes Barnes' work just fantastic. And you could just find yourself wholly absorbed by them. Now, Barnes painted a lot of sports, for sure. There's a lot of football and stadiums and locker rooms and boxing matches, things like that. But, and the reason we're talking about him today on the podcast is he also painted musicians a lot. The Sugar Shack, which I mentioned before, is a painting, you know, of just a Saturday night in Durham, bodies dancing to a band. The painting that most touched me at the exhibit was called The First Maestro, just a picture of an African-American boy standing in front of an old transistor radio in a kind of more rural kind of shack, with his arm raised in the air as if he's about to, you know, bring down the first note of a symphony. Beautiful, just an absolutely beautiful painting. There was one of a street quartet that was really great. And the thing about Barnes is, you know, elongation is the first word that comes to mind. His figures are not realistic. The proportions are not right? Because what Barnes is, he's not really, he's a figurative painter, but he's not necessarily concerned with realism. He's trying to capture movement. He's trying to capture rhythm. And also, the thing that struck me the most about his work is that his paintings show people, like, this is not just, like, there's a painting of his called, like, Halftime. And it's inside a locker room and of a football game, and the players are exhausted. Like, it looks like they have been through a war. There's a body on a stretcher. There's guys bleeding. There's guys being yelled at by coaches. Everyone's sweaty and just exhausted. But all of Barnes' paintings are like that. Like, people are at the most critical moment of their lives. They're giving their all at that very moment. The stakes couldn't be higher, whether he's painting, like, a track race or a little boy about to conduct an orchestra. This is like, the stakes are high, and it's just everyone, and the people in his paintings are just always at the verge of exhaustion, but also somehow completely swept up with his stuff called life. It's just really alive and visceral, his stuff. You know, I think like most people, honestly, you get older, you get more certain in your beliefs, and maybe arguably Barnes got a little preachy in his old age, right? The themes of his paintings became a little bit obvious even if they were sort of uplifting and empowering. But you can't hardly blame him for that, right? It happens to the best artists for sure. And I don't know if that's because as you get older, like you become more confident in your beliefs and you feel like they're validated then and you feel enough confidence to share them with the world, or if you just get old and crotchety like everybody else and just no longer care what people think. But, you know, overall, those paintings are kind of far and few between. They dwindle out toward the end of his career. And it's a small mark against the man who otherwise had a pretty tremendous career. Barnes ended up dying in 2009 at the age of 70. So he, you know, lived a good long life and just really, really an impactful exhibit. Ernest Barnes exhibit has taken me down some pretty interesting rabbit holes. The first one being a singer-songwriter named Bill Withers. And now, by all accounts, I should definitely have known who Bill Withers was. I should have definitely been familiar with him. He is the guy who wrote hits like Lean on Me, right? Grandma's Hands, Just the Two of Us, and the song Ain't No Sunshine When She's Gone, which my wife and I danced to as our first dance as a married couple. And of course, it never occurred to me to look up and see who wrote the song I had my first dance with my wife to. It was Bill Withers. Who knew? Go figure. So Bill Withers and Ernie Barnes were friends. Withers actually commissioned a painting called Grandma's Hands, presumably to accompany the song by the same title, which, by the way, has since become my favorite Withers tune. The lyrics just sort of slither along the grass like a snake. It's unbelievable. Anyway, Withers garnered like 7 Grammy nominations, won 3 times, was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2015. And I can highly recommend a little YouTube action. Bill Withers' 1973 BBC concert. This guy is built like a strong safety himself, right? He could have played pro ball himself. And he's just crashing his hands against this acoustic guitar sometimes and proving my wholly unsubstantiated theory that 1973 was the best year for music in the history of music. Rabbit hole number 2, Marvin Gaye. Now, I'd heard of Marvin Gaye, of course, all right? His hits include How Sweet It Is to Be Loved by You, I Heard It Through the Grapevine, which was, when I was a kid, was very famous, very popular, because it had the raisins, the dancing raisins on the commercial, dancing to that song, and Let's Get It On, What's Going On, Mercy, Mercy Me, Sexual Healing, all those are Marvin Gaye songs. Marvin Gaye actually harbored some NFL dreams himself, considered trying out for the Detroit Lions in 1970. But Marvin Gaye met Barnes in a pickup basketball game in Los Angeles after Barnes' playing career was over, and they became friends. Barnes showed Marvin Gaye his painting, The Sugar Shack, and Gaye ran off with it, right? Eventually putting it on his cover, I Want You. And like I said, The Sugar Shack, arguably Barnes' most famous painting, used in the closing credits of the 1970s sitcom Good Times. Now, Marvin Gaye did pay Barnes for the use of the painting on his album cover, but he also never returned it. So Barnes ended up painting another Sugar Shack that was close to the original. And that's the one, you know, that we see in the exhibit at the museum right now in Raleigh. But Gaye's estate, after he died, eventually sold the original Sugar Shack to actor and comedian Eddie Murphy, who presumably still has it. Now, this whole thing got me thinking, too, a little bit about dual threats. Double threats. People who are, or, you know, maybe world class in two fields, particularly athletes. My thought was that this is probably a pretty rare occurrence, that someone could be a professional athlete but also excel in some other field, be it art or music, physics, whatever. So these are the guys that came to mind. Bernie Williams, All right, Bernie Williams was a 5-time Major League Baseball All-Star with the New York Yankees, won 4 World Series, 4 Gold Gloves in center field. He's also a classically trained guitarist, and he now has a couple contemporary jazz albums under his belt. And he was actually nominated for the Latin Grammy. And he played with guys in his professional baseball career, guys like Derek Jeter, Alex Rodriguez, you know, and now he's playing with Bela Fleck and Bruce Springsteen. I mean, talk about a charmed life. Another guy who comes to mind is Todd Marinovich. He was an NFL quarterback for the LA Raiders, earned distinction as with the nickname Rob Quarterback, or the first test tube athlete. Now, his parents were, you know, whatever the athletic equivalent of a stage parent was, they were it. Todd never ate a hamburger growing up. He brought his own cake and ice cream to friends' birthdays so he wouldn't ingest sugar or refined flour. His parents raised him to be a professional football player, a quarterback, and he was taken 24th overall ahead of other luminaries like Brett Favre. Unfortunately, Todd got involved in some substance abuse issues during his career and kind of derailed everything there. And after some highs and lows, now seems to be kind of bouncing back because, along with being a professional athlete, he also is an impressionistic painter. He works on commission, does a lot of community-based art projects, and some abstract stuff. You can check out all his work on toddmarinovich.com. Now, there are many examples of athletes who are able to parlay their success, of course, into some kind of commercial art project. Don't get me wrong, right? Willie Gault as a ballet dancer, Manny Pacquiao, Barry Zito, Shaquille O'Neal. The list goes on and on. Now, but most of these guys were a whole lot better at sports than they were at their artistic endeavors, which means, you know, they probably never would have made it as an artist on their own. Which makes, in my mind, which makes what Barnes accomplished in his life all the more impressive. You know, at most, 3 people have ever done what he's done, find true success in 2 different disciplines. But anyway, Barnes lived a truly fascinating life. The exhibit is definitely worth coming out if you can get to Raleigh. If not, maybe jump online, learn what you can, check out some paintings by Barnes. Anyway, cool guy, double threat, painted the way music sounds to me. You know, that's the truth. Just paintings seem full of rhythm and movement and life. And whatever beat was going on in that scene, Barnes certainly seemed to capture it. And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening to the A440 podcast. Once again, I'm Charles Fiore. You can check us out on Facebook and Twitter, our website, a440pod.com. Tell your friends, and let's jam again soon.
baby.